Welcome to Brian's Spain Domain, and today we are going to talk about a bit of very recent Spanish history, a story that takes place in the very pretty and yet relatively unknown region of Extremadura. This region is located on the western side of the country, and it borders Portugal. Foreign tourists typically visit other parts of Spain, like Madrid, Barcelona, and Seville, but there are a lot of reasons why they should visit this wonderful land. Extremadura is steeped in history, going back to some of the earliest moments of Spain's past. The famous Via de la Plata, or Silver Route, was a historic route for precious metals that goes back to at least Roman times and probably earlier. It ran north, south, right through this region. Speaking of the Romans, you also had the famous city of Emerita Augusta, which is today known as Merida, and was one of the most important cities during that period. Emerita meant veteran, as in veteran soldiers, and it was a common retirement territory for former members of the Roman military. Nothing better than to spend your final days in the splendor of pleasant Spain after 25 years of grueling military service. If we recall the movie Gladiator, this region is where our main character Maximus Decimus Meridius came from. During the Age of Discovery, several of the most famous conquistadors were born in this landlocked region. It may seem ironic, but it kind of makes sense. Young people are always looking to get out of town and find something new, and there was no better way of doing that than by going to the New World. Pizarro, the leader of the expedition that conquered the Incan Empire, was born in the town of Trujillo. So was Francisco de Orellana, the European discoverer of the Amazon. Hernan Cortes, who conquered the Aztec Empire and Mexico, as we all know, came from the small town of Medellin. It's also in Extremadura that Emperor Charles V of Germany, who was Charles I of Spain, one of the most powerful men of his day, we are talking the 16th century, when Spain was soaring as an empire, he sort of spent his final days, his final reclusive days, in the monastery of Yuste. And further to the south, the original Virgin of Guadalupe is found in a beautiful town that goes by the same name. Extremadura is beautiful countryside with plenty of green meadows and pastures populated with holm oak trees and rolling hills. The holm oak produces acorns, the famous bellotas, which the Iberian pigs feed on, which is where we get the name for the coveted jamón de bellota, that excellent Spanish ham, and where that ham also gets its distinctive nutty flavor. There are four major cities that we should mention. One being Merida and its Roman ruins, Trujillo and its medieval atmosphere, Cáceres and its magnificent old town, which has been described as monumental, and finally historic Badajoz, located on the border of Portugal. It is the largest city in the region. Extremadura also has some excellent food, some excellent prime ingredients. It's superior Iberian ham, the bellota, its olive oil, its vegetables, even its wine is becoming famous. But it isn't the first reason you think of when it comes to fine dining. Other places like Barcelona or Catalonia in general, Madrid and the Basque Country often get center stage, and it's normal. But there are excellent eateries here, many of which are an excellent value, and there's even some real standouts in haute cuisine on the international scene, possibly the most well-known being the restaurant called Atrio, Atrio, A-T-R-I-O, in the city of Cáceres, owned by José Polo and Toño Pérez. Polo and Pérez have been together since they were 16 in the 1970s. In 1986, they opened Atrio when neither had really any idea of how to cook, let alone run a restaurant. And yet, 9 years later, they got their first Michelin star. And in 2004, they got the second one. In 2010, they opened up their boutique hotel with just 14 rooms, many of which look out on the beautiful and historic San Mateo Square. Together, they have created an absolute haven for foodies and lovers of upscale living. And so it was at Atrio that a recent event occurred that would rock the wine world as well as the hospitality world. On Tuesday, October 26, 2021, a woman booked a room for one night as well as a table at the legendary restaurant. She checked in with a Swiss passport, went to a room, and then later came down for dinner. There she was joined by a male companion. Towards the end of what was probably an unforgettable gastronomic experience, Jose, it appears, came out and made the rounds, greeting diners, asking how their meal was and if they enjoyed it or not, the type of things they do at these restaurants. He came to the table where the couple was, and they spoke to him in English. They chatted for a few minutes, had a nice talk, and that was about it. Jose and the rest of the staff would later say that initially they didn't pick up on anything unusual, though in retrospect, there were details that could have come across as suspicious. For example, they were overly friendly, or probably a little bit more so than what you'd expect from a typical customer. And the woman's hair seemed a little bit odd, probably because she was wearing a wig. And the man, who claimed to be an architect, didn't recognize the Swiss architects Jacques Herzog and Pierre de Meuron, which would be like an English architect never hearing of Norman Foster, or a Spaniard not knowing who Antonio Gaudí was. That should have raised a red flag, but how many times do we detect these things and not give them a second thought until later when it is too late? Anyway, after dinner, the couple requested to see the wine cellar, which many guests do. After all, Atrio's cellar was possibly the finest in Spain and among the best in Europe. It houses 4,500 different wine labels from all over the world and has over 40,000 bottles in all. After that, the couple retired to their room, only to show up at the desk around 1:30 a.m. to order a bite to eat because they were hungry. It was a strange time of night and a strange request, something the night clerk couldn't really do much about. The kitchen was closed. But they insisted, and finally the staff member, minding the establishment's policy of always catering to the customer, was eager to please the guest and kindly went back to the kitchen to see what he could do. He came back and told them that he could make them a salad if that would work, but that it would take a few minutes. And I'm sure the reply was something like, "Take all the time you need." It was during this time away from the desk that the male guest, who hadn't registered by the way, supposedly slipped into the wine cellar and proceeded to engage in what has come to be one of the most incredible wine heists of all time. He snatched 45 bottles of wine and managed to get them into the room without the staff member noticing. This required somehow accessing an area that was closed off normally by magnetic locks and avoiding security cameras where possible. They obviously knew exactly what they wanted and exactly where it was. The next morning, they departed bright and early at 5:30 a.m., paid with a prepaid credit card, very unusual and very difficult to trace, and left the city. The missing bottles wouldn't be discovered until sometime around 1 in the afternoon, 8 hours later. For all anyone knew, the perpetrators had left the country by then. Once the police had been notified and the theft reported, the next question was whether or not to keep it a secret. Apparently, they planned on doing that at first, but eventually they changed their minds and preferred to own up and go public. It was a wise decision because word would have gotten out no matter what, and what would have been the point of concealing it? Either way, it has become one of the most notorious wine thefts in history, and quite possibly the most important in the history of Spain. You may have noticed by now that I haven't used the word Spanish wine, and that's because the entire loot was not from this land of great wines, but from another land of great wines with an even greater fame, France. 38 of the 45 bottles were red wines from Romanée Conti, one of the most prestigious wineries in the world, with each bottle valued at about 12,000 euros each. That comes to about 450,000 euros, $550,000 more or less, a tremendous blow to just about anyone. Unfortunately, the losses didn't end there. In fact, the news only got worse. They also swiped 7 bottles of Château de Kim, a Sauternes sweet wine, but not any ordinary Sauternes sweet wine, the only Premier Cru Supérieur in the category of sweet wine, which in France is basically like saying it doesn't get any better than this. Its characteristics are unique. Its winemaking method is painstaking. Its production is minuscule, all making it one of the most coveted and expensive wines on the market. Even a recent vintage, like say 2015, will cost about $500 a bottle. But these were older, much older. In fact, all of them were from before 1900. But the crown jewel was the Chateau de Kem from 1806. And it was the main attraction of this cellar, and the reason was simple. It was valued on the wine list at 350,000 euros, which at the current rate comes to somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000. What could possibly explain such an astronomical price? First of all, its age, 250 years old. Wines that old are always going to cost a fortune. Another factor is its provenance. In this case, as we know, Chateau de Kem, one of the most famous and venerable wineries in the world. This property has existed since the 16th century, and as a vineyard, it goes back to at least 1711. Thomas Jefferson, who was no slouch when it came to rating wine, considered it the best white wine in France and took home 250 bottles of it. It's a luxury wine owned by the mother of luxury companies, MHLV Louis Vuitton, no less. Another factor to consider would have been the state of the wine itself. In short, was it still drinkable? Anything to the contrary would have made it a grossly overpriced vinegar. And it has been tasted, for reasons I'll explain in a second, and been deemed nothing less than heavenly. Finally, was there a story behind it? A tale that would set it apart from the rest? Something that would make it unique? And there was. And that story began back in 2000 when Jose Antonio bought the bottle in an auction. It belonged to a group of bottles, 24 bottles of vintage wine from that winery, but the 1806 bottle was the oldest one in existence. The winery itself didn't even own one that old. But the problem with owning a bottle from that period is that the physical features can be unreliable. In this case, delicate bottles, delicate glass. Since bottles were handcrafted back then, you were bound to find small variations in each version. In the case of this bottle, it was the neck that was unusually long and fragile, as an employee of the restaurant would sadly discover. A year later, in 2001, he was trying to place it into a wooden case when he heard a distinctive and heartbreaking crack. The glass had fractured below the neck of the bottle, but because it was wrapped in plastic foil, the bottle didn't fully break and most of the liquid stayed inside. Jose Antonio promptly contacted the winery, who suggested they send it to him as soon as possible to see if the wine could be rescued and whether or not it was still in good condition. So they raced there. The experts at the winery tasted the nectar and found it to be exceptional, so that was a good start. Then they successfully transferred it into a new bottle and replaced the small amount of wine that had been lost in the accident with Swarovski crystals to make up for the volume. Both the old broken bottle and the new bottle were put on display at the wine cellar, but unfortunately, now the new one is no longer there. The final tally in price for all the bottles has not been revealed and has been debated, but some estimate it to be close to 2 million euros. That may be overdoing it a bit, but it would be safe to say that it is at least over 1 million for sure. Jose Polo assures that it was not so much the monetary value as it was the sentimental one that really hurt. It was their baby, their child. They had adopted it, nursed it back to health when it got banged up. It was one of a kind, just like any son or daughter. And you get the feeling that is how they saw it, and now it was gone. There is no doubt that this was a very professional hit. Smooth, clean, and swift, flawless from a criminal standpoint. You never know what may happen in the future. Sometimes these things reappear. But wine bottles are notoriously easy to stash just about anywhere, and it's not unthinkable that this one may be lost for good. But stranger things have happened. Clearly, the bottles will be kept away from the main open market since they are all cataloged, but there is another underworld, the black market, where there is always someone without scruples who will gladly accept the chance to get their hands on it. The owners have braced themselves for the worst, if only for personal health. Any good news that comes from there will be welcome as if it were a miracle, and it may just take one. We'll have to see what happens. In the meantime, please go and visit Extremadura, and if you can, go and check out Cáceres. You will not be disappointed. And if you are in the heart of this historic old town, there are many great places to get a good meal for every kind of budget. But should you be feeling in the mood to treat yourself to something special, you can still enjoy a meal at this wonderful restaurant, which unfortunately is also the setting of a bit of tragic recent history. And that will be all for today's podcast from Brian's Spain Domain. Feel free to leave a comment or question. We'd love to hear them. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you soon. Hasta pronto.